Hey guys, excited to do this. Thank you to Paul for letting me borrow the SF Beyond Call mic for a little bit. Happy Halloween, everybody. My name is Russ Simpkins. I go by the screen name of Mad Cow AK on both the Discuss Forum and SFB Online. Like all of you, I have a passion for Starfleet battles. It's been a part of most of my life. For me specifically, I have a passion for the monsters of Starfleet battles. For the last year or so, I've been doing some work quietly building a project around them, what I call my SFB Monsters module. It being Halloween time, I thought, you know, what better time to give a little peek inside the workshop, let you in on what I've done with it so far, and talk with some of the concepts of what's core to what I want to see accomplished in this Monsters project. Most of you don't know me well, so I'll start with a little intro so you can understand where I'm coming from. I was first introduced to SFB way back in 1979, when one of my older brothers got the first boxed edition, the designer's edition, for Christmas. I, of course, got absolutely blown off the map because, you know, they're several years older than me, and I was hooked enough to start playing solo, work on improving my game, because, you know, hey, I wanted to beat my older brothers, and what better way to do it than with a game, you know, where my small stature wouldn't hinder me. Unfortunately, my brothers, they didn't really stay as connected to the game as I did, so I rarely got to challenge them on it. Both joined the Navy, and I was kind of left alone to explore this really complex game by myself. I spent all my allowance buying the expansion modules. I mowed lawns to buy everything that came along in the Commander's Edition. I bought F&E 2 way back when it first came out. But I never really had opponents to battle, so I played a lot of solitaire scenarios, and most of the official solitaire solo scenarios, they involve monsters, so I kind of feel like I grew up on those. I credit Starfleet Battles for showing me how to self-learn, to teach myself well enough to get through college. For me, it was exercise to build up that most important muscle between the ears. I learned how to learn from Starfleet Battles, really. Grew up and moved to Washington from Washington State to Alaska and floated in and out of active SFB play. There was a really active group here in Anchorage back in the day, but as luck would have it, the group kind of fell apart as soon as I discovered them. So I still routinely checked out the local hobby shops, scooped up every SFB product that came along, and of course that meant buying SFB all over again when the Doomsday version came out. Anyway, about 3-4 years ago, got it in my head that I wanted to somehow become a more active part in the game universe that I was always so enthralled by. Kind of a bucket list thing. You know, I wanted to add something, to contribute. And what better way could I do that than by writing fiction, right? You know, Steve Cole's always begging for fiction. So I started writing. Started with an idea based on the real world trapdoor spider. It would pop up out of nowhere and attack a Federation cruiser, and my hero captain would save the day. But I didn't get very far before I realized, you know, even I was bored with that old cliche storyline. Like SFU needs another Federation story. Add to that Steve Cole's progress spreadsheet for Captain's Log 50 at that time listed a new monster he had created, the Space Spider. But I kept at it, and before CL50 came out, I'd hammered out what I thought was an interesting story about a new monster. Its style of attack lent better to a squid-type body anyway, so better than a spider, so I had my new Kraken fighting the sparsely touched on, at least in fiction, the ISC. In my story, I kind of got where I was straining the limits of canon in some of my handling Veltresi Quads, and when I sent kind of an early release to ADB, just run it by them, and they, of course, quickly jumped all over my interpretation on those quads and were like, no, that can't fly. But still, Steve Cole cited that I'd what I'd done with them is really creative and very interesting, but not what ADB had envisioned quads to be. And Gene wasn't thrilled with the story and the fact that everybody in the story died. So, but the basic story was good enough. And I quickly realized that my action-packed fiction monster was a giant scenario turd. As a game monster, it was dull and tedious and had little to offer for a veteran SFB player. I knew I needed to fix some parts of the fiction, but what was the point if my monster just sucked? So I totally scrapped the old Kraken, started building a new scenario-first monster, one designed around a scenario, something to be fun to play. But it would be unique, and I tried to make it as deeply tactical as I could. A monster designed not for beginners, but for veteran players. That would be replayable and, most importantly, fun. It took me a very grinding 6 months of continuous head-pounding agony to get something that might approach those lofty goals. Like anything you spend a lot of time on, you learn, you practice at it, you get better. And I became more creative at the craft at building an SFB monster at that point. Monsters, they really have this amazing freedom from the lockdown rules of Starfleet battles. I really never have to worry about all those so deeply protected game balance issues that all the other scenarios, they're kind of locked in the specific rules. They're boxed into it. The only balance I really need to concern myself with is between my monster, the opponent ship I set it against, and the enjoyment of the player who gets enticed into flying that ship. So with monsters, I get to do things that can't be done in regular player versus player scenarios, not in pirate raids, and especially not in historical scenarios. I can have my monster do just about any damn thing I want it to do. I can have the player's ship do lots of crazy, interesting new things to my monster that you wouldn't otherwise get to do. It's kind of like my own little pocket universe within the SFB universe. My playground and my rules. So it just has to be fun. And that's kind of my guiding principle. And it's got to be interesting to players, right? People have to think in ways they haven't before in Starfleet battles. So part of my process in rebuilding the Kraken was to take a long, hard look at the existing lineup of Starfleet battles monsters, since this is really the standard I had to meet. I don't think for a second that I'm any kind of tactical Starfleet battles guru, but looking at the classic monsters in particular, they are just so flawed. There are such glaring weaknesses that you just focus on those, and as long as you don't go all Leroy Jenkins on it, they're pretty simple to overcome. But they do what they're designed to do. They're teaching tools for newer players to learn to think tactically in Starfleet battles. They're simple puzzles, basically, for beginner-level opponents. And I guess their random die rolls are just there to keep them from the outcome from being a foregone conclusion. And, you know, you start to think, what would it take to take these solo monsters that are beginner level stuff and make them into something that would have more to offer a more experienced player? Well, for first, they couldn't be one-trick ponies, with one way to win and one way to lose. The Moray, for instance, Moray Eels, if you can overwhelm its close-in defense system with seeking weapons, you'll win without even getting a nosebleed. Secondly, they can't be completely predictable, which is one of the big things that most of the existing ones have an issue with. If you know exactly where the monster is and where it's going to be, you know basically what it's going to do to your ship, you can probably figure out a clear way to beat it. Another thing a monster can't be is a simple luck of the die roll challenge. There's no fun in that. It's working the tactics that make playing Starfleet battles fun. If the tactic is a roll better than the monster, that monster's a fail. Sure, all this is easier said than done, but that's where the fact that you're playing in my sandbox comes in. I've learned that as I think more out of the box, more of the out-of-the-box ideas, my sandbox gets bigger and bigger. A bunch of the ideas that don't work on one monster turn out there to be a game-changer for a different monster, a different beastie that I've got. And so working on several monsters at the same time in my sandbox, it's kind of turned that sandbox into an industrial workshop of sorts. I can crank them out. The biggest downside of good monsters is some level of added complexity. You know, the more interesting and harder they are to play requires more rules. And how far is too far with the new scenario rules? The Kraken scenario rules that I sent to ADB ages ago, I think I had 4 pages of scenario rules just for that one monster. And it's very different than any published scenario, and by far my worst case scenario for complexity. It's also really deeply tactical and replayable. The Kraken comes at you in a lot of different ways, and all those ways are sort of designed to play off each other. So if something works one way and it may not do well the next time you play it, but another aspect of that monster is going to be kicking your butt. So so it's a fun animal to play, I thought. I don't claim to be some sort of genius in creating, but and that one was kind of a particular fortunate melding of happenstance and a lot of perspiration. And it was my real first attempt at making an advanced scenario monster. That process of creating it became a guideline for what I sort of look for and what I try to avoid in monster design now, you know, being too complex. So going back, when I was first looking at the classical monsters, kind of going through those, and where they fell short, it was kind of natural to wonder what could be done to fix them. What could you do to make these monsters better? Mores, of course, needed better seeking weapon defense, patch their vulnerabilities to the gunboats and fighters. Planet Crusher was just brutally predictable. You know, all the basics. Come to find out, there's some really great ways to take these old classics and give them a good redo. Make them into more than they've been. Fix some of the glaring tactical holes and make them less predictable. I try to pull them off their rails and give them more depth. So probably about this point you're all thinking, you know, stop with all the nebulous generalities and give us some specifics on how you do all this with these wondrous promises. And I'll get into some more detail as we go through the topic. But I also have to worry about giving too much away, and then, you know, if I do want to submit these to ADB and have them come back and say, you know, that was great stuff, we like it, but since you've already given it all away for free on Paul's show, we don't really see any need to bother with it. So forgive me if in the end I kind of hold back a little bit of my cards and keep them close to my chest, but definitely be getting a little more deeper into specifics. All right, so I have a bunch of Starfleet Battles monster-related content created. Some new rules that mostly pertain to monsters. things like advanced MCIDs, the Monster Close-End Defense System. I created a couple of new types. You know, like drones have different types, phasers have different types. MCIDs really, really needs some extra types, some differences, ways to cover up glaring holes. I worked on an advanced S6.0 how to defeat monsters rule. That's been touched on briefly on the ADB Discuss board. And sort of haphazardly last Halloween on this show, SFU On Call. I made some fair progress on that front since then, and it's looking better. I made the things I call space lice. They're monster parasites that give monsters really a shockingly enjoyable venue for boarding party actions. Starfleet Battle boarding parties are like the stuffiest, most boring parties ever, right? Space lice, they bring togas to the boarding party. There's a rule system that I've code-worded Gremlins that makes for absolute chaos if you aren't managing it and mitigating its effects. With some tweaking, it could be adapted to just about any scenario, really. And, man, in tournament, it might be insanity. Imagine your ship all ready to pour an alpha strike on somebody or something. But all of a sudden, your helm locks up, and you don't get to turn for that entire turn. You're stuck straight line. The only option you have is to emergency decelerate. Lots of stuff like that in the Gremlin system. And it's been sort of my little secret pride and joy project. It's been really fun. Besides some new rules, there's the remix of classic monsters that I've been working on. Advanced versions meant to be monsters for the veteran players, not for those beginners. Mores are still mores, for instance. You know, I don't want to touch on those and break them and change them and ruin all of Steve Petrick's great work that he did in Captain's Log. So I created conger eels, which are relative species of mores. Well, a fair bit different and much different to play. I have some new planet crusher monsters that, with some simple twist to the basic monster, they become really nasty. A lot of pucker factor in those guys. The space amoeba. Really haven't changed that one a whole lot. Still looking at the old classic combination monster, the classic mind amoeba, the cosmic mind monster, cosmic cloud monster, the mind monster, and the space amoeba. You bundle all those together and you got something a little different, but it's old hat stuff. But what changes it is using my advanced how to kill rules and this gremlin system together against this monster, and it makes it a whole different animal altogether. It's very different. Have some new monsters too. I'm gonna lump the Kraken into this for now, but since that one's already in ADB's hands, I kind of feel like that one's out of my control at this point. But the Kraken comes with like 20 pages of fiction, 20-something pages. I think it was 23, 24. But there's a bunch of that story that I didn't include in my submission just because I was cutting and ripping a bunch of stuff out of it to squeeze it into the Captain's Log format. Didn't want it to be too long. And I have a what I call the Pogo Devil. It's a new monster that I haven't gotten much past the core ideas on that guy, but really a very unique solo opponent. I have the Hydra. I'm not sure if I need to rename that one since we already have Hydrans in the universe, but Yeah, as you'd expect, it's a triple fat monster. You got to take out each individual piece in certain cases, but a couple other various vague scenario ideas that may or may not pan out, but stuff to work on. And it's all a lot of stuff to try to keep straight in my mind for just hobby work. Every scenario will come with a few pages of setup fiction. For me, this is like the easiest part. And I've been saving doing the actual writing as a sort of a self-incentive to finish all the grind work and building all these monsters and rules and playtesting through the details and going through all the sequence of play intricacies. The legal aspects that are kind of drag and are boring. I have most of the story, the fiction plot outlined, and the story characters are set. I just need to finish all this drudgery work so I can let loose on the fun part and bring these stories to life. If you missed the previous show on all that setup fiction concept, I think we did it back in March or whatever, but basically, what that is some short fiction that sets up each scenario and gives the player a feeling of emotional investment and wanting to play the scenario. Makes you want to win. But it stops short of detailing the action or the outcome. My presumption with this was, you know, if you know how the story ends, you don't feel as compelled to play out the scenario. But if you kind of get compelled to put yourself into the shoes of that captain walking into the scenario, then you have an emotional investment in wanting to play it and win. So I've done some test work on this already, and I feel really strongly this new way of presenting scenarios, it really hits the target. It works well. Okay, so when I finish all this and I have a bunch of monster content, I'm really, really conflicted about this. I really don't know what to do. The obvious thing is to package it all up and send it on to ADB. And, you know, do I shoot for the moon and push it as the basis for a dedicated monster module, a new scenario module 3? But with Steve Cole, you know, he looks at the scenario modules, and in the past they haven't sold well, so it kind of be a hard sell for him. But for me, it would be the best case scenario on what I would want to see, because, you know, it'd give me more space. I could add in a lot more of the fiction points, the subplots that I took out of the Kraken story. Or I could present it as maybe something that could be broken up, spread out over, you know, the next half a dozen captain's logs. How long would that take to have before it would all come to life? Who knows? How many are we getting for captain's logs each year nowadays? I really like the module idea. Just there's so much more space there that just seems like the better way for me, at least for what I want to achieve. But of course, this isn't my puppy to do all the production and publication for. It's more his stuff, so I kind of have to work with what he wants to do. But my huge fear in all this is that I send it on to ADB, and I've kind of experienced this with the Kraken. I don't know if it's ever going to see the light of day, ever. I think it's going to become a someday project. And, you know, maybe Steve Cole will have long passed, and I will have passed, and all of you will be gone, and the sun will have gone cold before any of it is published. So not meaning to attack or criticize anyone at ADP, it's just that my experience with them so far, with the Kraken and some other things, it's been more of a, you know, we'll work on that after this next project. And that's been going on with the Kraken for over 3 years now. So I really don't have any faith in that process anymore. It just seems like it's a black hole where nothing ever escapes. If I send in my stuff, I just don't think that anyone will ever see it. So I don't know what to do with it. And, you know, if I send in that scenario heavy module, subject already regarded with doubt by Steve Cole. All I've really ever done, all I'm accomplished is to giving away any say in it, and all my sweat and effort might vanish for nothing. And, man, that's hard to risk. Hard for me to swallow. And ultimately, I just want all this shared with you guys, with the other people who love the game. I want to add to the canon that makes up the universe. So what do I do with it? I really don't know. And at this point, I think I'm going to take a pause from talking and let Paul or anyone else voice their thoughts on all of what we've gone over so far. And I'll come back and try to get into some of the details that I've been glossing over. We'll talk about conger eels next. So back in a bit.
Well, Russ, I'm sorry to hear that you had trouble with ADB. Obviously, ADB is a very busy company, and they usually have a certain schedule in mind when it comes to their different products. And I understand that sometimes ADB is not exactly the greatest when it comes to those things, i.e. communication, which is kind of important when it comes to developing products in concert with other people. The one thing that obviously is... as you ran into, was that ADB also keeps a very high quality standard when it comes to things that they ship. And it was kind of obvious with the whole issue that they had with shipping the ATF, you know, ACTA SF stuff through Martin. And that, you know, he really did not live up to what they expected, and they left out of that control outside of themselves, you know, let it go a little bit. And they found out what happens when they do, when they actually trust individuals to do what they say they're going to do. And they've had obviously problems in the past with sculptors and different designers and things like that. So it's hard to rely on the people outside the company. Again, as I said, you know, you ran into the really high quality standard. And one thing that I actually just mentioned in the past podcast, which I still need to email you about, and you will be getting an email tonight, in addition to seeing the announcement of the Halloween edition of this wonderful podcast, is that... one thing we might want to try to do is take some of your ideas and implement them as a play test. So the idea would be to engage players in playtesting the scenario, playtesting the rules. Now, the rules would only be implemented within the client himself so that it could stay playtest, so people can actually test the rules without actually having knowledge of them, and therefore they're not really being published. And with that, I think ADB would be okay with that idea. Obviously, we probably want to start with something small, something that you don't think would be really hard to actually implement the rules to the degree where people have foreknowledge of the rules. Because that's always the issue with rules for monsters or any automated system, is that there's foreknowledge of people that know how that monster's going to react, how their opponent's going to react. I'm thinking about the robot player for FedCom. So in that case, you know, I think having them published, quote unquote, published or put out there on SFB Online, I think it'd be great. I can add the integration into that. Obviously, it's going to take me a little bit of time, but I think it could definitely be very doable. Obviously, some of it will be a more of a manual integration for the players, i.e. click this button or basically click this button, go to this phase, click this, that kind of thing. So with that, I will let you continue on with part two.
Hey, Russ Simpkins here again. So we are talking about Starfleet Battles Monsters and some of the work I've been doing on a collection of monster-related material that I call the SFB Monsters module. So my focus with this project has been pretty exclusive to the solitaire scenario monsters. Things, you know, like the space dragons, While they may or may not have room for further development into even more interesting monsters, the fact of there being two-player monsters where the monster's controlled by a second player, those types of monsters are inherently unpredictable, challenging, competitive, all that, just by the fact that, yeah, they're controlled by, at least hopefully, by an intelligent opponent, so they can surprise you. That's really tough to get with solo monsters. Get it to surprise a player. The best a guy like me designing a monster can hope to do is to throw in enough possibilities, enough options or whatever, that the player might get hit with a situation that they either hadn't considered or they thought it was so unlikely that they really didn't prepare for that. So if you can get your monster to do that kind of stuff, to get that to happen, you know, you might have a decent monster. But again, it's really, really hard to do. So I want to kind of talk a little bit about, you know, the creation process that I go through with a solo monster, with creating a new monster or work on upgrading an existing one. Some of the considerations that drive an initial concept of a monster through an evolution of sorts and into something that I hope is a solid, enjoyable scenario monster. And for this, I'm going to go and use the Conger Eel as an example. It's one of the ones I've been working on particularly recently, and how it came about and why it kind of is the way it is, at least at this point. Maybe talk about some of the wrong turns and some of the failures in its development, why they didn't turn out, and dig a little into how it works and why it works, and maybe some of the deep thought on why the tactics on that might be interesting. So, anyway, obviously the Conger Eel is derived from the existing Moray Eel, which is kind of a beloved oldie there. When I looked at the Moray and any way that I could improve on it, I broke it down into the Moray's essentials and what gave the monster its personality, if you will. You know, its ability to bite through shields, directly cause internals right through the shields, you know, it's probably its most distinctive trait. That monster cannot be fired on from a range greater than 6 hexes, so you got to get close, or at least reasonably close. The Morays, they don't actively go out and attack you. They use this reactive movement and reactive attacks. That's the threat to your ship. So you've got to kill that monster before it gets to its your planet that it's trying to you're trying to protect. To do that, you've got to attack it, and then it reacts to your attack and attacks you back. And that's both the strength of the monster, and it's also, in a big way, its Achilles' heel. And once again, it's a defining trait of that particular monster. And I thought it was important to keep those kind of traits for any kind of redesigned monster. You want that monster to have that same feel and framework of the original classic monster, but find ways to tweak it a bit in a redesign, get it to do a little more, add some depth, and give it some more tactical complexity, I guess. My absolute rule was to don't do anything that negates all that great special monster rules articles that Steve Petrick did for the last 30 or so Captain's Logs. The work in that he's done in there is something that I really have to be mindful of when I'm working on these. I won't step on any of that, and I think if I did, it would probably doom any monster that I did anyway. So once I've kind of established the traits that make up the core personality of the monster, I look at what doesn't work very well in that monster. For the Moray monster, that is partly the simplicity of the single type of MCIDs, but more importantly, the fact that it ignores you unless you use direct fire weapons on it. So you can approach it and fire seeking weapons, and it doesn't react to you. It doesn't do anything to you. So, simple way to defeat it makes the monster unfun in certain situations because you just overwhelm it, and there's no threat to you. that reactive attack. And so it being a defining trait of the Moray, any improved version of the monster still needs to retain that ability, but it can't just let its squadrons of fighters or gunboats slip in and kill it with mass seeking weapons. So that was something I would have to fix in a better monster. So to fix that, my first thought was to tweak MCIDs a little bit for the monster. It was suggested somewhere, either in the rules or in Petrick's Captain's Log article on Morays, that you could increase the number of firings that a Moray's MCIDs or MCIDs in general could do per impulse as a way to counter such situations. But, you know, that just makes it more of what I was talking about earlier on a die roll challenge, where you're just trying to roll better than the monster. And it doesn't really add anything for the fun of the scenario, in at least in my opinion. And it really kind of is the opposite. It just drags it down. Diminishes the enjoyment. More die rolls rarely make more fun, unless there's a really good reason to do so. Okay, so I thought I would come up with a bunch of different types of MCIDs. And, you know, we've got all these different monsters, and they all have the exact same countermeasures for seeking weapons. And, you know, that doesn't make any sense at all anyway. You got different monsters, completely different monsters, yet they all use a very, at least similar enough system that they're simulated using the same rule set with the one type of MCIDs. So I worked on ideas to add different types of MCIDs, to give it different strengths and weaknesses or whatever in the MCIDs. And I eventually fell upon the idea of making a type of MCIDs that couldn't be overwhelmed. If far too many seeking weapons were going to hit the monster's defenses, they would go into like a burst mode, and this burst mode would mitigate most of the immediate mass threat, making it impossible or unlikely or whatever to take out the monster in one or two waves of just mass seeking weapons. And if the triggering threshold would maybe allow the MCIDs to be overwhelmed to a lesser degree, where you could still get a number of hits in there of some good value without triggering the burst mode. But if you got too many seeking weapons or too much damage pending from those weapons, that would trigger the burst mode and take off the top of too many weapons. So that would still allow seeking weapons to be useful and an effective weapon, although less effective since you'll lose a greater percentage to just the normal MCIDs. You'll have to do that. You'll have to kind of trickle them in to some degree to just enough to overwhelm, but not enough to trigger the burst mode, basically. Now for the monster, it would have to give something up to invoke this burst mode. And you got to kind of, well, what would a monster lose? And having the monster come to a complete halt to stop to burst mode for an extended period of time following it. You know, most of the monster scenarios are time sensitive. You only have so many turns, or the monster's going to get to your target, your planets you're defending, whatever, in a certain amount of turns. So if you can delay that, that's an advantage to you. So this would be a good way. You could expend a whole bunch of ordnance to get that monster to stop and freeze and delay its progress, you know, giving you some advantage. And that would at least look, that's what I looked at for kind of giving the monster some deficit for using this thing. So by adding this new type of MCIDs to the Moray, I felt like I had solved the issue of overwhelming the monster with seeking weapons. But that just, it wasn't good enough for what I wanted to accomplish. It still had the same monster, and it still had the flaw relating to the passive nature of its reactive attacks. Doing some kind of proactive bite attack, you know, well, that turned out to be just too much. It was hard for ships to survive two volleys of internals every turn, or most every turn, and they still have that ship be viable for very long. The scenario would be over with. You would lose. My big epiphany kind of came from using smaller eels. So I made this new species of eels. They were lesser-sized versions of the morays. You know, we don't have morays in my part of the world. I'm in Alaska, Pacific Coast. We don't really have eels here. So I did a quick internet search of other kinds of real-world eels. And came back with a smaller cousin of the moray called the conger eel. And so that's what I've been naming my new type of eel. So a lesser critter. You know, I'm sure all you guys on the Atlantic side of the coast are probably heard of this beastie, but I never had. So in SFB, the space conger's trick is for several of these eels to bundle together to kind of school. Another Google search reveals that a group of eels can be called a swarm of eels, a bed of eels, or a fry of eels. You know, well, a fry of eels is too fitting of a term to pass up for use in Starfleet battles, right? So when part of a fry, the eels cooperatively bundle their standard MCIDs together for the protection of any eel in the fry. So it kind of turns those collection of bunch of monsters into one single entity of monsters. Something that by rule, MCIDs, you know, can't be used to protect a different monster, but if, at least in my sandbox here, I can make my own little exclusions. And so I use my MCIDs from all of the grouping of, or my fry of eels to defend any of the eels in the fry. So with that, there really wasn't any need for that new type of MCIDs. MCIDs B, as I call it, for burst. The standard MCIDs being type A, and I figure, you know, hey, if the scenario doesn't specifically tell you otherwise, your monster uses type A. And now I have a type B that, yeah, it's something I can throw in my toolbox for later use. I also came up with another type of MCIDs that extended the range of anti-fighter shots. So it would still only shoot at seeking weapons out to range 3, but for fighters would shoot out to range 6. And that was another way that could be used for a monster similar to the moray, where you've got to get close enough to fire on it, but this will make doing so with fighters and whatnot a threat. So anyway, back to congers. So the congers are small enough that, you know, if you alpha strike on the beastie, you can get a kill on it in a single impulse if you have enough direct firepower. So with that aspect, you know, I've opened up the use of a proactive type attack now for the monster using its bite. One of the congers in the fry can attack proactively when you come in range with any unit. So anytime a unit comes into range 6, it can shoot out there and bite your ship. Using that same dash speed and the shield penetrating bite that we're used to with morays and the reactive attacks. But since you can usually kill an individual conger with a strong direct fire attack, it doesn't survive long enough to retaliate with a reactive attack. Although it's still there, if you don't kill it, it comes back and bites you, and you get bit a second time. To spice things up a little bit, I figured out, you know, if you could have the fry launch a proactive attack at an individual unit every 8 impulses, so if you stay within range, it'll keep attacking you after a period of time. And that kept you from simply closing and hosing the whole fry. Solved that issue. Things like T-bombs and mines, you know, those were devastating to the fry if I left it as is, where, you know, you could do 10 points of damage to every fry, every eel in the fry. So I had to kind of work some rule magic there, some hand-wavium, to make sure that it would only affect a limited number of eels. Otherwise, it would just unbalance the scenario using T-bombs, and I wouldn't have really fixed the eel. I would just have changed its weakness. Finally, it would be possible to wound my individual eels, my congers, with a threshold damage amount, say 20, 30 points of damage, whatever, that would slow the eel, at which point it wouldn't be able to keep up with the fry, and thus wouldn't be protected by the fry's combined emsids. The cost of doing so for the player, of course, would mean that you're not killing the monster, you're wounding it, and it's going to reactive attack on you. So part of one of the interesting tactical puzzles out of this monster involves that, because, you know, if you give the fry more eels in it, then you have turns to kill your opponent here, kill the fry, all the eels in the fry. You can only kill one eel per turn, but it takes you, you know, what's it, 9.5 turns to get the moray eel to the planet unimpeded. So if you had more than 10 eels, because these ones don't get distracted by you just be coming close, well, then there's a tactical issue of, well, I can't kill one per turn and still win the scenario. I have to do something to slow them down, weaken them, whatever. And there's a cost to doing that, which is more bites. And your ship really, and in this case I've used a couple ships, and they just can't withstand too much of that. So it gets to be a point where you've got to switch from one tactic to the other at one point, and you got to figure out where that is. So to make a good tactical puzzle out of the monster, I first wanted to show off its strong resistance to seeking weapons. So I wanted to pit it against a Kazeni force, the one with fighters and lots of drones. Using the same scenario setup as the Moray, then you get kind of that same issue where you've got the 10 turns where I got to get that monster taken care of before it gets to the planet, and I give it more eels, then you can do so in that limited amount of time by killing one per turn, and you don't really have a great deal more firepower than to do enough to kill one per turn. And so that way, you could add some fighters in to show off that aspect of the monster. And those can come in and kind of clean up some of the left-behind eels that are not in the fry anymore. You can use those seeking weapons to overwhelm it. But, of course, you've got limited seeking weapons on your fighter, so you don't want to do too much on one small eel. So, first thing I looked at for the Kazeni was a carrier to defend the planet, because, you know, that would give me pretty much what I wanted. Direct fire ships and fighters too, and lots of drones. But the required escorts, you know, that you have to have with a carrier, they were worthless in this scenario. They couldn't do any damage at range to the fry, and they wouldn't survive, at least for very long, driving in to do any kind of close attack, because the proactive attacks of the eels would, you know, take them out before they got into Phaser 3 range. Disruptors in Phaser 1s are kind of required to kill a conger at range 6 and whittle down the fry and be able to get back out before the fry is able to get a second shot at you. So carrier groups, they just didn't work. So I started looking at, let's say I'll use some cruisers. I first looked at year 166, the time frame where the Kazeni are in the process of upgrading their fleets with the sea refits. I loved the idea of using an upgraded light cruiser with like 4 disruptors, and it's coupled with an old strike cruiser that hasn't received that upgrade yet. And that cruiser could take a lot more pounding, but didn't have the light cruiser's firepower. They only have 2 disruptors and the firing arcs on those old light cruisers. If you remember, they're, you know, left side and left front or something like that. So you kind of got that front row firing arc to get both of the disruptors, which it only has the two, into a single shot, a single impulse. So that created sort of an interesting dichotomy, whatever. You got a fragile ship with lots of punch and a larger, tougher ship, but it doesn't have the teeth. Unfortunately, the light cruiser just can't overload all those disruptors and still keep up with the Fry. So its firepower is somewhat diminished because you got to standard load some of them. And the strike cruiser, of course, it just lacks enough firepower to pull this pairing off for the task at hand. When it starts taking a couple disruptor hits, it's useless now. And you need some more heavy weapons there to take that off. And the drones are absolutely worthless. When you're playing this early on, you're like getting internals and you get this hit on your drones and you're like, oh, thank God it didn't hit my disruptors. It's kind of like a free hit. So I upgraded the strike cruiser to a battle cruiser. I figured I could get a group of fighters from the planetary defenses to help with cleanup. And after futzing with the legalities of the rules of for the Conger Eels and where exactly events happened in the sequence of play, I finally got to start playtesting my new babies, and they worked, but not well enough for what I wanted them to be. Flying against the Fry, the cruisers, they just simply followed behind, accelerating early in the turn, getting into range 6, firing, and then slowing down, sideslipping to fall back out of range before the second proactive attack. And it was kind of dull. Nothing's really going on except for you're whittling down slowly the Fry, which is what you want to do, but it's really not enjoyable doing so. It needed more. So somehow I needed to force the player into more maneuver, because that's part of the fun of Starfleet battles. To make the player plan ahead how he might attack the Fry next and make him or her consider which eel to target. Oh, we wish we had some more hers in this game, right? One thing I neglected to mention earlier, that individual eels, they have a variation on the damage it would take to kill each eel. So using a set value plus like 3 die rolls would give the total kill value that you'd have to get the amount of damage it takes to kill that eel. And I know that's been used somewhere with space boars or sheep or something. I don't recall where exactly right now, but it makes the player think about which eels to go after first. Because you got the big dogs, which they require more under your firepower, which will be undamaged early in the game, in the scenario. For both of your ships to take it down in one impulse without it retaliating. And if you wait too long, you're going to end up having to take bigger chances on that. But there's also the alternative option of leaving those ones for later, because you're going to have to wound some of them later anyway, and leave those guys for your fighters to clean up. So you got that option. Each eel I already had set up that way to track individually, because they all had a different damage value. And, you know, I thought if I gave him a normal secondary shield damage attack, just a normal damage attack that hits the shields before it gets into internals, you know, that would help force a little maneuver on the player. The player would have to keep a healthy shield facing the Fry when it approached, at least. And I kind of imagine that attack is sort of like, you know, a little terrier, one of those small dogs that goes after rodents, thrashing a toy around, you know, throwing it back and forth, causing a bunch of damage to your ship. But so to make that attack, it was either too strong, you know, you couldn't withstand it for 10 turns and have your ship survive, or it was so weak that it really wouldn't accomplish its purpose until the later turns, when the shields are already worn down and, you know, you're already into a more interesting aspect of the game anyway, where you're feeling that pressure running out of time. and you're having to consider dumping firepower between more than one individual eel. So, you know, ultimately, just that as a secondary attack didn't really achieve at all what I needed it to do. So, another fail. So, I kind of looked in my workshop toolbox, because I'm making all these different monsters, and pulled out a bunch of ideas that I hadn't really used, at least too thoroughly elsewhere, for some secondary weapons. And these could be sort of randomly assigned to each individual eel, so there'd be like a choice of six possible secondary weapon options for an eel, and you would roll at the setup of the scenario what each individual eel has for a secondary, as well as what its total damage to kill is going to be. So you've got really unique eels that make up the fry. All these secondary weapons, they do different things. So now you've got to consider, you know, which are going to be my better targets, what are the bigger threat to my type of play, my strategy for defeating these creatures. One of these would be the normal damage attack, enough to threaten internals. If you ever took a second strike from that weapon to a shield, so yeah, you can take a good hit on the forward shield, not have it go through, but you take another one, you're going to not be wanting to do that, so you'll have to turn another shield to it. So there's five other secondary weapons, and well, I don't know if I'd call them all weapons, but abilities or systems. And they each pose kind of a different threat, and it really makes each eel more unique. Besides the normal damage attack option, some of the abilities change your facing. So it would be like, you know, the eel's going and grabbing you, biting you, and it's twisting, and all of a sudden, well, now you're facing a different direction. And, oh, it also burst your warp bubble, so you're stopped. So another option to wear down your shields faster, even when you're not around, is kind of like, I call it shield acid. Another one for dragging you closer to the fry. So when it bites you, it's actually pulling you back closer to the fry. So now you're in danger of taking additional proactive attacks from the fry, from who knows what other eel. Something you would have to worry about. But a bunch of options like that. So I've got six different things that all are pretty cool and interesting. One slows you down, makes it so it's really tough for you to catch up with the fry again on the next turn. And if you don't kill an eel every turn, wow, you're stressed at the end of the scenario. It's really tough to get all those eels in the fry dead before they get to the planet. So another option. It kind of harms more than one unit. It's more of an area effect weapon. Or not really a weapon, but whatever. If this one's really nasty for the fighters in particular, but also you've got more than one ship here, so it's going to hurt both of your ships, even if only one ship attacks. So all this has made maneuver a lot larger part of the scenario. It makes the monsters a more unpredictable threat. Hopefully makes the scenario better than prior scenario monsters. And that's what I'm after. That's what I'm shooting for. Now the player, they got to consider which individual eel poses the biggest threat. So they, as part of their strategy, they're going to target those particular secondary weapon eels. And then they've got to consider the amount of damage it takes to kill those kind of eels. So which do they go after, the big dogs or the little puppies? Also, I had to come up with a sort of a simple system for selecting which eel is the aggressor for the proactive attacks. And, you know, that was something where you can't just use two die, because then, you know, the probabilities come into play where it's the ones in the middle are the more likely to. And, you know, what do you start? Eel number one is die roll three, two, the three ones or something like that. So lots of little things to consider when you're making these things work. You know, that affects not only which eel you're selecting for a secondary attack, but for other interactions, you know, such as maybe you're dropping a D-bomb out your rear hatch or whatever, and that's going to affect that. Because whichever the eels launches first in the proactive attack is going to take that D-bomb. Also, the Moray's bite, doing it this way, was just too strong. It just needed to be backed down a little bit for the Congers. They are smaller than the Moray's after all, so it makes sense that they would have a little smaller bite. And at this point, I did a fair amount of playtesting, and I found a few things that didn't flow quite right. Some subtle changes were made to clean up anything tedious. It just didn't quite work as intended. I have a workable advanced Starfleet Battles monster that is unlike anything done to date. It, by its nature, and by the nature of the secondary weapons alone, it's unpredictable and replayable, since the fry is composed of varied types of eels, each having different risks involved, and you get different numbers of those different kinds of risks each turn or each game you play. But I still wanted more. It was kind of like a fireworks display, you know, where it's kind of the same all the way through, but without the finale. So it was cool enough on its own, but it didn't quite leave you going, wow, at the end. And that's what I really wanted. I could leave it as is, but I wanted that emotional burst at the end where you have that, where the outcome is still in question, especially on the last turn, where the eels are at the doorstep of your planet, and the last of your really tattered and ragged, desperate forces are throwing themselves in the last-ditch effort to halt the danger. And almost 2 weeks of brain-racking later on that concept, and I'd just about given up. Didn't think such a thing was attainable. Didn't seem like I could find anything. My best idea was to allow the eels to be tractorable, allowing the player to pull the fry apart, basically. Dragging individual eels away from the rest of the fry and limiting their MCIDs to a single firing impulse. So that would make them more vulnerable to drones and giving the fighters a chance to make the difference in the clutch. But it just didn't quite work in playtest. It forced the already wrecked cruisers to close in on the fry when they still didn't have enough power and were lucky to even have tractors to drag on with. Especially dragging creatures that, you know, they're large and if not larger than the ships themselves. So you got to take a lot of power to pull something like that apart. And it just didn't seem like I could get the ships there with enough juice. And if they did, then they would be overpowered and you like won by a big margin. So it just didn't quite fly the way that I wanted to. Wasn't what I was aiming for. Too many things had to go right beforehand for that kind of an ending to work, and I wanted the fighters and the drones to be the final centerpiece of the battle. You got the cruisers all the way through, and then I wanted the fighters to come in at the last second and kind of give that last burst of everything they had, because the cruisers already have, given their all. So that just didn't fly. It didn't work. But I keep plugging away, and there is hope. So at the time I'm doing this, I'm about 12 hours after a new idea, a new concept of restructuring the fry, basically, which might just be the ticket. I've got a lot of hope for this, so maybe it'll work out. I haven't playtested it yet, but boy, it sure seems like it might be the one. So in this idea, the entire group of eels, you know what I've called the fry up till now, I wanted to reorder those, and I'm going to call the entire group of eels a swarm, But within the swarm, you have several subgroups, and each of those would be called a fry. The point of that is that only, you know, you've got the swarm, which would do the proactive attack the same way, where it would just select any of the eels at random and use that as the proactive attack on your vessels, or for each vessel. And but for emcids, the protection from this group wouldn't be from the swarm, it would be from the fry. So at most you would have 6 shots per impulse. And as you whittle away some of the individual eels from that fry, the subgroup of 6, of course your emcids of the monster starts to weaken a little bit. And, you know, maybe we can get the drones to be effective at the end without getting you down to, like, the last 3 eels in the entire swarm. So basically the swarm consists of fries, which consists of individual eels. And if I keep the emcids at a single shot per impulse per individual eel, like I say, then at most you've got a 6-shot emcids when the fry is completely healthy. And if you can break that down into only 2 or 3 left, you're down into the range of standard emcids or less with a squadron of fighters behind you. And, you know, I really, really, I wanted to have like 18 eels in the fry, but I just couldn't make that work before. And with this, I think I've got a good shot at doing that. And so then you've got 3 fries of 6 eels each that make up a swarm of 18 eels. Individual eels, each of those having their own little special secondary quote-unquote weapon. And well, that should make it really interesting, because I know I've played a lot of the secondary stuff and it's been fun, it's been perfect, it's what I wanted all along, but it's just its ending that I could not get, and I think this kind of concept might do what I need. And also, you know, if when you had the entire swarm or fry, whatever you want to call it, of 18 or 12 eels or whatever I was looking at doing, you know, that's 18 or 12 shots per impulse with the emcids, which is just extreme overkill for any kind of seeking weapon defense. Where if I'm breaking this down into 6 shots and then weakening that down, like I say, now I'm down in the range, even though I might have 9, 8 eels left at the end. Those are vulnerable to mass-seeking weapons. And, you know, I can give the planet some extra drone bases and maybe def sats that are drone-based to add to that if I need to bump up the drone count at the end just to make that work. So it does kind of play with a new bit of thinking that you got to do all the way through the scenario, where before you were shooting at, you know, if you have this list of your most wanted eels that you wanted taken away that you felt were the biggest risk, and once you got rid of those, it was just, okay, how to deal with the leftovers and the ones that you thought lesser of for your style of attack or playing strategy, whatever. And with this, because you've got to get these 3 different subgroups or fries, all of their emcids beat down enough to be overwhelmed, you've got to get them down to 3 per it or less, really, to make it effective, to have a shot at them. And now, instead of taking out the worst of the 18, you're taking, let's say, the worst 3 of those 6 I got to take out, and even if I got 2 over here that are still worse than any of the ones left over in my 6, I've got to target that particular fry that has more than 3 eels in it. So it makes it a little more interesting, I hope. But like I say, I haven't play tested it, so we'll see how that goes. The cool part is, this should make the fighters really what I wanted them at the end. They just come in, maybe in the last half of the last turn, or you know, however that works. So you're getting about 16 impulses of just absolute carnage and mayhem, and the issue is still in doubt until you can get these drones to either land on the monsters or get wiped out by the monsters' emsids, and it's crash, bang, boom at the end. So it should be amazing, I hope. That's what I'm shooting for. So anyway, I'm going to cut off here because I'm kind of droning on a little bit long on this one, and let Paul make his comments here. See ya.
Well, Russ, I think you got some really great ideas there. Especially, I like the whole idea of a monster-specific MCIDs. Though, obviously, I think that having like an advanced MCIDs, the whole idea is you have different kinds of MCIDs for each monster is a good idea. Though, you have to be careful about that because of then you make a big mess. I think basically writing up rules for advanced MCIDs where you have you can. Each monster can take, okay, I'm going to have this one, this one, this one, this one, kind of a menu system for, you know, kind of a menu of different capabilities, kind of different kind of MCID's capabilities. The whole idea of using a rapid mode where the monster has to stop afterwards, I think is actually really great. Also, the smaller eels, you know, with a swarm and the fry is great. I think you really did a good idea of splitting those up so you have a whole swarm of them, which are actually broken up into individual fries. Now, when it comes to various damage and, you know, basically various damage, I think you can use various damage to give it like a BPV rating. I think that's one of the things that you're missing because I think you need to have the individual eels to have kind of a BPV kind of rating because of it gives an idea you can have a larger or smaller fry, you know, larger or, you know, larger swarm made up of different fries. Also, I love the idea of different weapons, different, you know, attacks that the eels can do. Obviously, you have to limit those, I think. Because of you don't want to make it too complicated, otherwise people are really not going to want to play these monsters. They don't want to have a whole new set of rules that they have to memorize. I think that the MCIDs is fantastic, and different rules for the eels really are going to go forward. I think it's very unique. I agree with what you said about them being very unique to SSB. And I think it's something that people would enjoy to play. I understand the toughest part about any monster scenario is that kind of cliffhanger. The whole idea is that the battle is not complete until every monster is killed. You know that you want that, you know, that climax so that you have that tension all the way to the end of the game. So the monsters actually are able to almost get right to the pinnacle of the planet right there. They're right there, and you just stave off. Now, obviously, the one thing that you have to remember is that not every single game can be like that. Not every single time you play a monster is going to be like that because of there's going to be variable factors, whether it's from the die rolls themselves to how the monsters react. Obviously, the whole idea of a kind of a head eel to kind of lead the proactive swarm, I think definitely because that changes another variable that sets in, and therefore it can be makes it a little more difficult to overall come up with a scenario that's always going to be that nail biter kind of thing. But I think that whole idea is solid. And I can't wait to actually have someone outside yourself play test it, of course, because you can play test it all you want, but it's when you get it to other people, that's when you're going to really find the flaws that you missed, basically. Okay.
And Russ Simpkins back again. So, once again, we're talking about some work I've been doing on monsters for Starfleet battles. Myself, I don't really do anything with FedCom. I don't know the game system very well. I've kind of looked at it briefly and decided it really wasn't something that attracted me. The thing I do love about Starfleet Battles is the depth in which it simulates the universe of warp speed and ships fighting in space. And for me, I don't want it watered down and simplified. I want the complexity, the large numbers of possibilities of actions that I as a player can take. It's what draws me to the game. So what I'm saying here is I don't really put any consideration to how these monsters might translate to FedCom. I'm sure ADB and some of the other fans of the universe might have their concerns over how to do such things with FedCom, but it really isn't something that interests me, and I don't worry about that kind of problem. So I just want to make fun monsters for Starfleet Battles. That's my deal. One of the things I wanted to do in the monster module was to create the equivalent of SSDs for all of the existing and all the new monsters that I'm making for SFB. For me, maybe I'm just weird, but marking down that damage on an SSD or ticking off some checkbox, you know, it adds to the enjoyment of playing versus keeping a running math tabulation for killing the monster. It's... for my own use, I had, and this has been a long time, I had created some like small business card sized SSDs. They got like graphics of the monster and all the checkboxes for lab info for science and the damage checkoffs for the shoot up gill monsters. Also had any little specific weapons charts just for that monster, such as the Moray bite table. Use both sides, the front and the back, and I could print them on the business card stock that you can buy for your printer. It's already perforated, and then you can buy these like pocket-sized lamination sheets that are built for specifically business cards, and that's what I used and laminated my little pocket-sized SSDs, and then I could use dry erase markers on them, and just kind of miniature SSDs in a lot of ways. I have to say that that small format worked really, really, really well when I was younger and my eyes were better. Not so good anymore. But at any rate, yeah, even if I will probably do these at 8.5x11 SSD full-size sheets. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff that you can put on that stuff for monsters and whatnot. You can put the science collection data tables, all that kind of things. So I tweaked the Moray card that I built and turned it into a Congers, and then, you know, when you got a bunch of the Congers and a thing, you can keep track of each individual eel's damage, how to kill it or how much damage to kill it, a little checkbox for each secondary ability that specific Conger has, you know, since they all have options. And it makes the bookkeeping on us so much simpler. It's, you know, they're all individual, unique creatures, and if you try to do it on paper, it's a pain in the rump. If I do a submission, I'll probably do the full size pages and maybe lay Congers out, kind of like fast patrol flotillas, you know, except for use more than six per sheet. But we have SSDs, you know, essentially for fighters. Those only take like a dozen or so hits to kill, but monsters, that they often take hundreds of damage points to kill, and yet they have no SSDs. And this just seems like a really good place to remedy that if we were doing a monster module, and I feel that at least they're needed or wanted if not needed, and would be cool if they were done well. So I thought for now I might talk a little bit about some of the tools that I use for all of my development. I have been using Visio long, long ago, long before it was bought by the evil empire of Microsoft. And Microsoft's done some nice things with it, but not everything they do has been an improvement, of course. It does make really easy for me to build SSDs and charts and such for new monsters. All the graphics I usually do in there too. So like when I was rebuilding the Kraken from scratch in my second redesign of that critter, you know, I struggled to deal with a lot of the sequence of play minutiae. It's not my strong point. I might decide an event would happen at some point in the sequence of play, but then find out in playtesting that didn't work quite so well right there. And, you know, after changing it where it happens in the SOP, you'd basically have to go back and do another round of playtesting from scratch. And that takes a whole bunch of time. You know, I prefer to work electronically anyway, so if I can, use my screen for the map for energy allocation. You know, I built all that into Visio. And I know a lot of people strongly prefer the old paper and tabletop methods, but I get buried in papers when I do it that way, especially in development. So I built my hex map, everything set up in Visio, and I do pretty much all of my playtesting in that environment. And to remedy my struggles with the sequence of play, created this kind of object-oriented method of keeping track of events, which has worked extremely well. It really has sped up all of that process. What this means for everything that happens in the playtest, there's a graphic marker that I kind of grab and drag it and drop it onto the map in a particular hex. Things you would normally see or do in Starfleet battles, at least not done in that way. But it lets me go back to any specific point in the playtest process and just pick up immediately at that point. And I can branch off and start a new playtest starting at that point or redo it using a new tactic or whatever. And it really just, it's golden for me. I don't have to start from scratch all over again, like I say. And I can really hit any point of the sequence of play on any impulse and on any turn and do it rather easily this way. I can see what hex every unit is in at any part of the game. Sort of like a snail trail on steroids, you could say, since I can see all their actions that they do in each hex too. For example, let's say starting a new impulse and my ship is called on to move that impulse. I could drop a movement arrow specific to that unit that shows that I've moved it into a new hex. That graphic and the data of it shows the facing and whether or not I've sideslipped, turned, or whatever. And it automatically puts in the correct value for the sequence of play. So that, like, if I was doing voluntary movement, I could see that it would, you know, just say I'm moving on that turn, that impulse. That being voluntary movement, it would automatically assign step 6A2, which is the voluntary movement step. And then if I got pulled by black hole gravity, which is non-voluntary movement, done in step 6A1 prior to that, I could still drop that icon for involuntary movement into that same hex, and it would kind of show that, hey, there's something wrong here. You've got this movement before the other movement, so you should have been pulled back by gravity before you moved, which can really affect where you end up at. And it really becomes obvious, for at least for me, when there's some sort of discrepancy there. And it also makes it easy to go back and fix mistakes that you do kind of overlook early on, and you can go back and see those and fix them. You don't kind of taint your playtest by having boo-boos. So, yeah, even long after the game, I can go back and go, you know, I should have done it this way, or oh, that was a mistake, and I can make changes and not invalidate my entire playtest just by fixing a few little simple things. I might have to fix some corresponding moves afterwards or whatever, but it's all right there to easily edit and change. So once I've finished moving and I want to launch a plasma, say, I can just grab another icon, which is set aside for doing things like launching seeking weapons, and place that icon in the hex of my ship, and it asks me what I want to do, which, of course, is launch a plasma. Does that from a drop-down box. I select which kind of seeking weapon I'm dropping, all the targeting info, all that stuff. And And then maybe I want to drag another icon in there, which is fire all my direct fire weapons, my phasers and whatnot, and do the same for it. And it'll automatically place those in the proper area for sequence of play chronologically in that impulse. So, and, you know, finally, if I want to do a launch a hit and run raid on that same impulse, I can grab my boarding party action icon and drop it in there. And it asks me what I want to do, which is hit and run raid, and fill out any pertinent info on that. And each of these icons that are now displayed on the board knows what hex they happened in, and it can derive what the current impulse or the last known turn impulse that I'm working on. And, you know, if I don't like that, if I want to say it earlier or later, I can manually change it. But it kind of details what action I took and where that action happens in the sequence of play, so I don't have to remember or dig into that SOP annex and try to remember which comes first. It just is there as part of the information. And if there's issues, it's pretty obvious. The best part is all of the data that gets dropped into these icons. I can export that into like an Excel spreadsheet in chronological order. It details every event that happens before this, on the next impulse, same thing over again. And awesome part is that I can go back and change events at any particular point, and maybe try a new tactic from a set point in the game that I played earlier. And, you know, if I want, I can just duplicate the board and cut everything off that happens after this point. Say, turn 4, impulse 3, whatever, and just pick up playing from there. So I took a fair amount of time setting all that up, doing some coding in the background, whatnot, and but I have many times recovered all that time spent invested in building that system just in playtesting. Really speeds things up. And so before anyone asks me for that, ask me for a copy or to use, it really isn't as simple as all that. Even if I were willing to risk my own butt passing on these copyrighted materials, it wouldn't do any good, because you have to have a full licensed copy of Visio, which, you know, it's several hundred dollars for that program. And you have to have that. That's what it's all based on. And I also didn't build it for others to understand or use. It ain't pretty. It's not easy to learn how to use it, since I wrote it for myself. And, you know, I could probably do like a screen vid of some of how it works and pass that on to Paul, just if there's any ideas that he might find worth adding to SFB Online maybe at some point. But at this point, I was just talking about it. So kind of described how I go about things and speeding up things like playtesting for my monsters. And since you know, each monster that I make is unique, I build a new icon for each monster with all of its actions that it could possibly do and where they happen in the sequence of play. So helps me playtest better and more accurately. And because of my history of mostly playing SFB Solitaire, the sequence of play has always kind of been my nemesis, because, you know, I hadn't spent a whole lot of time and effort on its details, since I could mostly decide for myself what order things should be happening and play them that way. And myself as my only opponent, I rarely protested. So anyway, I probably don't want to get too much, but we're getting kind of late already, and I'll throw out a few more little tidbits to chew on. Still monster-related things that I've just looked at in this Monsters project. So one was the ISC and plasma torpedoes, which, you know, what's up with that? So as canon has it, the ISC has no contact with anyone outside of their 5 founding races, right? So they didn't think that they were... they had any neighbors. There was no one that they'd found. They felt like they're all alone in the galaxy at this point. They looked deep, deep outside from their core worlds, and there was nobody there. They grow their empire. There's what ADB calls their empire. I prefer nation, but expand the borders, colonize all these worlds, growing outward, and still don't find anyone. So the only threats that they encounter are their own homegrown pirates, an abundance of monsters more than others experience, but of course they have nobody else to discuss with that because they don't know nobody else exists. So why did they land on plasma torpedoes as their heavy weapon? Plasmas, they're kind of inferior to direct fire, I find, in fighting most monsters. The pirates themselves aren't really using military-grade vessels. They're using more like freighters, skids, free traders, that sort of thing. Not really using fighting Orion pirate-type vessels. So there isn't a great need for ISC to have anti-ship weapons. So why plasmas? I don't buy into any idea that it was like the only weapons technology tree they explored. Hell, a bunch of phasers would have probably been a better call than plasmas for fighting a lot of monsters. I've seen a few proposals on the forums to improve plasmas in the anti-monster type area, and those have largely been ignored or flat out denied since they affect game balance, really. They start messing with... what do they call that? Tactical information stuff, whatever it's called. You know what I'm talking about. They're like probe drones. They act like probe drones, but they would be plasmas. So, there's a need for it probably, but the believability factor doesn't really pass the smell test for me anyway. I can understand why such things haven't really panned out yet. So what could be done to help our little plasma brothers out there when there's something strange in the neighborhood? So I threw this question into my workshop's ponder machine, and out came, when plasma torpedoes are launched as seeking weapons and are hit by the monster close-in defense system, well, that should produce a certain amount of scientific data. Info on the monster. Ta-da! The high energy interaction between torpedoes and the monster, that would produce data that you wouldn't get from mere sensor scans. They just no longer, you wouldn't see such interaction from drones, if MCIDS hits drones, because basically that just sweeps them away. It sweeps them off the map. They don't explode, at least their warheads don't. They just kind of disappear for all practical matters. So the only game balancing issue, since it interacts with monsters, there really isn't one. It's only useful against monsters where you're getting scientific information. And it could be a good help there. And kind of make up for some of the lack of punch that they have with monsters, unless they are direct fired, which they take longer to grow, to power up and charge and get them all ready, and then they aren't as accurate. So a bonus, a way to kind of balance out the weakness of plasma torpedoes. Even if there was some benefit for gaining science on like a starship opponent you had, in reality, you would already know what that ship's made of, the technology behind its shield and hull fabrication. So you really wouldn't gain anything scientific from its interaction of obliterating shields or hull with plasma torpedoes. So there wouldn't be any game balance issues that I could see. And reason to want plasma torpedoes against monsters and kind of solve that ISC riddle that kind of bugs me. So, getting late. Think I'll stop right there. I hope all of you found this monster talk more as a treat than a trick. Again, happy Halloween. And if your front door opens to a threatening little creature, don't shoot it with phasers, okay? It might turn out to be a friendly monster, and then you'll lose the scenario. Oh, can I just say that I hate that result in the S6.0 How to Defeat Monster table, and I totally got rid of it in my advanced rules. Instead, for each point of damage that you do against the monster, is going to cost you the requirement to do additional science collection just to determine how to kill the monster. So you're pushing your end game away by shooting at it. You don't get to do that 49 points of damage just in case. And no more. So anyway, I'm going to shut up now like I promised. And this has been fun. And maybe we'll do it again another time soon. Good night and get the hell off my lawn.
Russia got some really neat stuff going on. I'm actually kind of surprised when you said you used video for EA that you didn't actually weren't using like Excel or LibreOffice, you know, kind of any spreadsheet program for EA because of just the numbers. It makes it easier to total them up and just do a little, some minor calculations, and you can get that done. And to me, that would be very useful for me. Now, obviously, the great thing about having a Vizio is if you have the game and the EA in Vizio, you can record both. It's because obviously with a sounds like with the professional version of Vizio, you can actually record the events that, you know, as you add pieces and do things, you can actually undo them or whatever. You can go through a sequence of events within Vizio, which I think is really cool. I think obviously doing plane testing on electronically is really neat, and also definitely avoids the whole pet factor. The idea is you have your kitty jump up on your map and wipe out your whole game. Gone. Ask any FNE player. They have that. When it comes to using the Vizio template, I assume it's a template or file, I would love this if you would send me a screencast of that, because I think it would be definitely useful to see if something I could integrate into SFB Online, you know, what kind of way you're using it. Maybe I can at the very least modify the SFB Online client to take advantage of some of those interactions, because obviously it's all about user experience. And if I can make the SFB Online client more friendly, more, you know, simple, you know, more intuitive about, i.e., improving the user experience, I think that'd be a fantastic idea. When it comes to actually the ISC, the one thing that I'm not sure if this is canon or not, but I would think that the reason why they were using plasma torpedoes was because they're crazy neighbors, the Gorns and the Romulans, when they actually ventured out that far. Then when they saw the craziness, you know, the fighting, and it's like, what the heck are they doing? I thought they were trying to duplicate those weapons that their neighbors used because of this, the PBD is a little something special. I'm not sure. But definitely, I thought the plasma, they had copied it from their neighbors. Now, how the neighbors came up with it, I don't know. So I think this monster Halloween edition is great. I hope everyone has enjoyed listening to the different ideas that Russ has come up with. And hopefully we will see some of his work published by ADB in the near future, or at the very least as part of the online client. And with that, have a happy Halloween.